This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 3, for August 11th, 2017. Engaged for 30 years. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
I don't remember that bell in there before. That's
every time,
new.
Every time someone says the topic is Trek, an angel gets its wings. Isn't that how it goes? Yeah.
Well, you just said it, so you gotta ring that bell.
Engaged for 30 years. I have friends like that.
Every time I hear you say engage already, I keep thinking I can see Picard doing something like that. Engage already.
And come then on, and the face palm.
Yeah.
Well, before we get too far this evening, why don't I say hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Chuck Tomasi.
I got caught in a transporter accident. I have nothing to do with this.
And Craig Stepp.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Greetings, fellow Earthlings.
Craig.
And it is, speak for yourself.
Craig.
You are in error. You are a biological unit. You are imperfect.
I agree.
As you can tell, we're still working out the format of this show.
Yeah. But we're upgrading to an M5 multitronic unit next week. We should have it down.
Yeah, just stay away from the power supply. And it's 44 days until Discovery premieres.
Yes, woo-hoo. I'm looking forward to it.
Everybody is on the same page. I remind you that the abbreviation for it is DSC, not STD.
Oh, my.
Yes. Just want to emphasize that once again.
What's DSC stand for?
Discovery.
It's That's like not an initialization.
Well, ENT for Enterprise and TNG for Next Generation.
Well, that makes sense. The Next Generation. TOS, the original series. DSC is Discovery.
It should be more like...
Stop cheating.
Right. All right, fine. It's STD. Fine.
No,
whatever.
It's not
whatever.
STD. That's not fine.
Okay.
I just hope people refer to it as Discovery rather than say, hey, that episode of STD was great.
Yeah, well, because
what?
That's just not going to sound right around the water cooler. I'm telling you right now.
But when you type it, it has to be ST colon D. Don't forget the colon.
Well, let's
that adds a whole other dimension to that acronym.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Once again, off the rails, but remember that the topic is Trek.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. We're back in, guys.
So why don't we take off with our subspace chatter, which is where we tap in and see what's happening in and around the Trek universe.
Hailing frequencies open, sir!
Press that button, though.
Not that one, that one.
This one or nothing.
Yeah.
So we'll start with you, Craig. You've got first up.
Yeah, first up, Star Trek Continues just had their new episode drop. I think it was like last week.
We'll pick
it
up.
Last weekend. Yeah. It's broken and a little super glue. We can fix it. So Star Trek Continues, I really enjoyed it. I don't know if you guys have seen it yet.
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Sorry, spoilers.
Go for it.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but it's a great episode. I like the aspect that they played in. You got to watch it. So do check that out. But remember that they have two remaining episodes.
Yes. And they had to adjust the schedules.
Did have to adjust the schedules. So coming up, let's see, I'm looking back here for the dates again. It was announced September 24th. Is the next one that's coming out. No, wait a minute.
Something else came up that kind of was going to...
Yeah, Discovery.
So,
yeah. There you go. Let me just read the whole thing. So it's their post on Facebook is, "Hi everyone, we scheduled releases for our last two part finale. It's a two-parter at Salt Lake City Comic Con and New York Comic Con. The release date for Star Trek Discovery has not had not been set early on when they started when they were trying to schedule this out, which is that was coming on is coming up on September 24th. So they didn't want to step on that and detract from Star Trek Discovery. So they will have a sneak peek of episode 10, episode X, at New York's Comic-Con
with
Sunday. Triple X. Sunday, October 8th, and will debut it publicly on October 18th. 10 days later. Well, their final episode, Star Trek XII, 10 or 11.
XI.
Someone call IXII.
And it will be released publicly on November 13th. With a sneak peek episode at the event prior. So, October 18th, November 13th. I love these episodes, like I mentioned before, and I wish they could continue a little bit further, but this is the end of the road for that.
Right, right. So, it is sad. We have another story coming up later on about how what, at least one of these productions, they're utilizing their sets and what can come from that. So we'll get to that story a bit later.
Hooray.
And by the way, If you're not familiar with the episode that just aired, it has John Delancey in it. I started calling John Q Delancey. And help me out, Clinton.
Battlestar Galactica.
Judy
daughter of June Lockhart.
Yes. I said, help me.
I am helping you. He's just holding the flame under him and watching it burn. Because dead air always makes good podcast.
Well, anyway, why don't you go ahead and watch the episode? And I think you'll enjoy it. All these productions.
In Lockhart.
Are worth your are worth your watching. And all right, so let's move on to our next story, which involves a video game. This fall, Star Trek returns for the first time in over 15 years when Star Trek Discovery premieres on CBS and CBS All Access. Fans won't have to wait long to get more Discovery action, though. Star Trek Timelines will be bringing Discovery into the game. Star Trek Timelines players and Discovery fans can look forward to the addition of new crew members to the game, including Lieutenant Commander Michael Burnham and Lieutenant Saru, I believe it's Saru, as well as new ships from the Federation and beyond. Players will also get hours of brand new Discovery-related game content, including a month-long Discovery mega event.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I do a, for Dog Days of Podcasting, more information at dogdaysofpodcasting.com.
Ding.
I'm reviewing video games that I play, and I say that I don't play video games on my phone. Well, Star Trek Timelines is actually the one game I do play on my phone. It's not an action game where you move your troops around or those type of things. You can do massive multiplayer aspects of it, but it's essentially you against the machine, which is a lot easier for me to deal with. The premise, though, is that there's been an anomaly and all the timelines of Star Trek have converged together. So you have all the characters from, minus the Kelvin universe, all the characters from the movies and the television shows all interacting together. And so I was wondering, well, what's going to happen when Discovery comes along? And well, they've
answered that for you.
They're going to bring characters from Discovery into it.
All right.
So I recommend that game. And this is exciting news.
I love it. Oh, wait, that's
right. You may have to tell us a little bit more about the game because I tried to play a little bit. And I'm not going to say lost interest. Kind of got lost in the game.
Was that like the old Star Trek game on the old Apple II where you just had a grid and you moved some things around?
Yeah.
Not really sure what the gameplay was all about.
That was the Star Trek game we had talked about. I played on the Apple. Remember? Yeah, you go to certain coordinates and there would be some Klingons in there and you had to destroy the Klingons and save the bases.
Well, the first game I played like that I played with punch cards. So got me to printer in the college's library. Exactly. Do that, but slow it down times 1,000, and that's how fast the game
click, is. Click, click, click.
Hey, don't mock. So I have punch cards in my computer bag right now.
Well, speaking of you, Chuck, let's move on to the next story. You've got that one.
Next story is Star Trek Discovery is going to explain how the Klingons got their ridges. This sounds like a Dr. Seuss title if there ever was one.
I'll still get our ridges back. I think that's another
thing. Right.
We learned a while ago that Star Trek Discovery will take place 10 years before the events of the original series and within the original prime timeline. Sorry, JJ. Recent dispatches out of the Alpha Quadrant have concerned the Klingons, whose newly shorn appearance has baffled fans who wonder why anyone would ditch those glorious manes. The inspiration behind the new look has been revealed, and like so many Trek-related things, it's some sexy science.
Ooh, my.
Trek Movie reported on a recent actors panel at Star Trek Las Vegas where Mary Chifo and Kenneth Mitchell, who play Klingon commanders Laurel and Cole, respectively, touched on the detail and authenticity they'll bring to the roles. They discuss speaking Klingon throughout the production, although subtitles will be provided for those not fluent.
Yay.
The panel also introduced a first look at Cole, who comes from the House of Kor. Mitchell, along with Discovery alien designers Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick, broke down Cole's outfit and bearing, which led to the revelation that Discovery will feature 24 Klingon houses.
That's right.
You'd think Game of Thrones was tough to follow.
No kidding.
Well, the members of all those houses have varying looks. Ah, this is starting to make sense. Page suggested that these revisions are more an expansion than anything. The Empire is very big. The Klingons don't always grow up on Kronos. I thought they said Kronos in Star Trek VI.
I thought that's how they usually called it.
Okay, well, it's Q-O-apostrophe-N-O-S.
Kronos. Kronos.
Kronos.
I love their submarine sandwiches. They're really great.
Oh, I think there's some Hebrew in there, too.
That's Quiznos.
Oh, sorry.
Toasty. Anyway, they don't all live in the same planets, and certainly those from different planets would have different environments. So how would the cultures have evolved differently? He continued. We try to come up with the cultural axioms for each house so each looks different and they bear a cultural patina like our cultures do here on Earth. Bing, 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 bing. You know, you pick up somebody from Papua New Guinea and somebody from Brazil and somebody from Alaska, and they're going to look very different from each other. They'll have different cultures, and I think this is a great thing. And we're all on the same planet, so imagine what happened if you took people and started distributing among other planets. That's beautiful.
That sounds to me like that actually makes sense.
Yes.
It does, because I've always wanted, you know, I always thought it was kind of weird, even in Star Trek Beyond, you know, that you finally see the Klingons, and they all are dressed the same. And they all look very similar. You know, it's like, hey, you think there'd be a little mix up here.
Right.
You know,
some variety. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Or the genes don't, the DNA doesn't spread enough.
I'm going to read on because they do get into the back reference to
Worf
said, as for the follicle free heads, they're a matter of practicality. Discovery will provide a genetic reason for the forehead ridges, which the Klingons developed as apex predators. Apparently, there are extrasensory receptors in those ridges, which the Klingons would rather not dull with a do. Chifo inadvertently touched on the sexy and vital angle when she referred to some of the pheromones produced by the ridges. But in all this talk of alien phrenology, no mention was made of the Klingons' augment virus, a failed medical experiment that had the unintended effects of wiping out their forehead ridges and almost taking out the entire civilization. But maybe it's just as Worf said, they didn't want to discuss it with outsiders.
Absolutely.
I thought the Klingon augment virus was meant to be something related to the pheromone.
No.
That's why Worf.
Your augmentation lasts for more than 4 hours.
If your Batleth is still in the air.
Well, even Worf was scared to have relations with a human Earth woman.
Well, that's true.
There were lots of jokes circulating on the bulletin boards back in the day about that kind of stuff. So we won't go there today.
True. Won't we? Right. I think we did.
We yeah, that's true. We won't. We won't stay there. How about that? We're going to hop over from Star Trek Discovery back to TOS for our next story.
Yay! So, the Wrath of Khan is finally making its way back to theaters.
I had to give a Khan shout out when you did that.
That's right. So, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan is going to screen at 600 theaters in September with new Shatner interview. Okay. I didn't know that part. Today, Fathom Events and Paramount Pictures announced that they are bringing Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan back to the big screen in a two-day event this September. The film, which many consider to be the best Trek film in the franchise, will be presented in digitally remastered director's cut, and as an additional bonus, William Shatner will appear in a newly produced in-depth interview. Can you possibly say anything else about this movie that will play before the screening?
I can.
Lunch on day two, I had...
The poster that's behind them in that one picture is different than the one I've got.
The picture, you're talking about
the Wrath of Khan poster they've got has Khan kind of at drawn. The top and the Enterprise at the bottom, the title on the bottom. Mine has the title in the center and is surrounded by almost like a montage of photos, scenes from the movie.
Yeah, I think I've seen a couple different versions of that poster.
I know there are usually multiple versions of most movie posters, but I had not seen that one before.
I've seen the one where it looks like Khan is drawn.
Yeah, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Darn. Might have to. Yeah, that's.
All right.
Might have
so
to get another one.
So the screenings will be Sunday, September 10th. That's kind of weird. September 10th and Wednesday, September 13th. Even more weird. At 2 p.m.
What?
And even 7 p.m.
Weirder. Yes.
That's some weird times.
2 and 7, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what's fun? Yeah, it is weird because if you were going to, like me, I would take my son to go see it. Wednesday's out. School's in.
Right. But you've got Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. I think right? I'm good. I guess that's when I'll be going to because I'll be
I
going.
I guess so.
Are y'all going?
I'm thinking about it. It's been a long time since I saw it in the theater. It was their opening night for it. And we went also the second night. I think we went back to see it because it was just that good.
I got
to
check what theaters it is around here.
Oh, and this is a good time to remind people that if you go over to thetopicistrek.com, we'll have the show notes with links to all the articles that we're talking about. So you can... dive down into that for the Fathom Events link and various other things.
It's pretty now, close.
I took Harrison when Back to the Future had their 25th anniversary a few years ago, and that was fun going back and watching something like that in the theater. So I can only imagine, well, obviously it's Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. It's probably like the best movie ever, but, you know, I can go see it again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so now we're going to hop forward from the original series to The Next Generation. For our next story, Paramount threatened to replace a TNG cast member with Jerry Ryan in Star Trek Nemesis.
I'm okay with that.
I was going to say, yeah, but what if it was Picard they were talking about?
Yeah.
I don't think that makes any sense.
Why is she playing Data?
The final film for the Star Trek The Next Generation crew was nearly short one cast member. According to Marina Sirtis, Star Trek The Next Generation's Deanna Troi, negotiations for her return in Star Trek Nemesis were not going smoothly, and at one point, Paramount Pictures threatened to replace her in the film with Jerry Ryan. the actress who played the Borg 7 of 9 on Star Trek Voyager. And this is a quote. When I was negotiating for Nemesis, they literally threatened to fire me and recast Troy, Sirtis recalled during a panel at the Star Trek Las Vegas convention, and this is via Trek Movie. We're not actually recast, but they said they were, quote, going to fire you and hire Jerry Ryan. And I said, well, Jerry Ryan won't do it for that money. That is for sure. And as we know, things worked out, and because obviously, ultimately,
this was for Nemesis, right?
Yes.
Riker and Troy got married. I don't see that working any other way with Jerry Ryan.
Obviously, Riker would be in the tub with Jerry Ryan. So, what's the problem? Are you concerned about Riker at that point?
Imaginations run wild.
Yes. I don't know.
And thus, fan fiction around the world was launched. Good night, everybody.
I don't think I could have done it without.
It's your last film, although I suppose they didn't technically know that was the last film at that point. But that would have been a rather bit of a bummer to not have her in it.
The way they wrapped up that movie, I guess at some point they figured it out before they wrote the script. So, because they kind of tied up, you know, Riker's going this way, Data bit the dust, and...
Hey, spoiler alerts.
Accident, probably are a lot of people out there who haven't seen Nemesis yet, but...
I kind of liked it. I saw it a couple of times. I liked it.
I liked it okay.
I'm in the minority on a lot of the Star Trek movies that people don't like, except we're all in agreement on Star Trek V.
Yes, it's the masterpiece of the ages.
Like a fine wine.
I've always told everybody that
Nemesis... need to drink fine wine when you're watching it.
Lots of wine.
I like Nemesis enough, but I don't know. I didn't think what's his name? Bad guy wasn't
Bane.
Yes, I don't think he was angry enough. I mean, they didn't have a reason to be angry at Picard just because he got dealt a wrong hand.
So it was a bit of a train wreck, but you kind of wish, if they'd had one more, kind of had that even odd type of thing going. But although that was 10, wasn't it? That was Star Trek 10.
Nemesis
right?
was 10. Yes.
Yeah. So much for that. So much for that theory. All right, let's move on then to our next story. And I believe that's you, Chuck.
William Shatner urges Star Trek The Cruise to ditch its dolphin experience. It's been over 30 years since Captain Kirk revealed an affinity for humpback whales in Star Trek IV The Voyage Home. There'll be whales here.
More fan fiction is... Good night, everybody!
But William Shatner still has a soft spot for sea creatures. Together with the help of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, a.k.a. PETA, not from The Hunger Games. Because the topic is Trek.
Yes. Thank you.
The former Star Trek actor urged the Norwegian Cruise Line to refrain from offering a swim with dolphins experience on an upcoming Star Trek-themed cruise with Entertainment Cruise Productions, a Norwegian travel partner. I'm so happy that Star Trek fans have the opportunity to climb aboard Norwegian Jade's Star Trek The Cruise and experience their own interstellar voyage of sorts, Shatner wrote in a letter to Norwegian CEO Frank J. Del Rio. He sounds like he could have been a writer for Star Trek. Which was posted in full to PETA's website. However, so long as your company offers swim with dolphin experiences, what should be a futuristic voyage will be set back light years. The cruise Shatner refers to, Star Trek The Cruise 2, The Wrath of...
The sequel!
Sequel, I get it. The Wrath of Flipper.
The Raft of Flipper.
Raft of Flipper.
Uh,
The cruise leaves from Miami and makes a stop in Honduras, Belize, and Mexico over the course of 6 days. Aboard the ship, passengers can partake in nightly shows hosted by Star Trek actors, as well as meet and greets, a Klingon pub crawl, which sounds terribly dangerous. Oh, crawl spelled with a K. Yeah, makeup tutorials, Star Trek themed scavenger hunts, and more. However, it's the Swim with Dolphin attraction, which the cruise's official site doesn't appear to mention, that bothers Shatner, who hosted the first Star Trek cruise in 2017. I have a friend, a local friend, who went on that last year. Oh. Said it was awesome. This year's voyage will be hosted by none other than Mr. Sulu, George Takei. George Takei. Are we in agreement? Is it Takei or Takei? What was the consensus on that?
Takei. It rhymes with, I believe he's used, rhymes with toupee.
Okay. Rhymes with that, too.
Yes.
Aboard the USS Enterprise, it was Captain Kirk's duty to explore strange new worlds and seek out new life and new civilizations in order to advance the diversity of our own. Shatner's letter continued, the exploitation of any species for profit or entertainment would have violated the Prime Directive. The 86-year-old actor goes on to urge Del Rio to go where compassionate companies such as TripAdvisor, MasterCard, and more have gone before, by discontinuing the attraction. Surely Star Trek fans would appreciate the decision to allow dolphins to remain in the wild and prosper. And don't call me Shirley. I'm with him. I did a dolphin swim at Discovery Cove in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
What was it, about 10 years? No, 8 years ago now. And it was fun. It was kind of cool. It was like my birthday present that my wife gave me, and we went a few months later. I have pictures. I don't know exactly how those dolphins were treated. They are, Discovery Cove is part of the SeaWorld park system, and we all know what kind of press SeaWorld has been getting lately about their killer whale treatment. And
deserved or undeserved, we won't get into that here.
Right, right. Because after all,
the topic is Trek.
That's right. Exactly.
That's right. But, I would prefer to see them in the wild. There are places that have open beaches where the dolphins will come up and swim with you. So they're not contained and in captivity. They're free to swim away at night if they want and go hunt or sleep or do whatever, make baby dolphins. And they come back the next day because they know they're treated well there. So it seems like you could do something like that. Like Grand Cayman has a stingray bar. You go to a sandbar where the water goes from about 100 feet deep, comes up to about 6 feet, 5 feet, and you stand there chest high in the water, and the stingrays come around, and you feed them squid. You know, that's kind of a cool experience, too.
Sure. Well, I guess part of it is, for me, strictly the fact that what does a dolphin encounter have to do with Star Trek to begin with?
It's a tourism thing. You're on your right. You're on a cruise, and when the cruise makes right. various stops, you have the ability to go there. So I don't know if these, it right, didn't I'm really sure, say sure if these dolphins were in captivity or not.
Right. I mean, I'm sure it is definitely, I mean, I was being somewhat facetious that I'm sure it's part of the normal cruising, but you know, as far as a Trek cruise, it really is non-Trek related. I suppose you could opt out doing it. So it's undetermined yet whether or not that will actually be taking place. If we get any more word on that, we will follow up with everyone on that aspect of things. But let's move along to our next story. We're going to hop again. We're going to go from, I guess that's all Trek for the Trek cruise, but we're going to move now to the Kelvin timeline.
Yes, the Kelvin timeline. So Star Trek convention was in Vegas last week?
I think it was last week, yeah.
And there was a pretty big, it was a panel kind of interview thing with Carl Urban, who I believe did a great job as Dr. McCoy.
Absolutely.
Yes, and he dropped some nuggets of information about next Star Trek, and he said basically, which is what we already know, he was chiming in saying that what Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine basically said was they want to do the next movie, but Paramount hasn't really committed to it yet. So they're still waiting. They're in a wait and see. Well, let me back up. I don't know if they're necessarily waiting because they have plenty of work to do on their own.
Right.
But they need to get it on the schedule. And I'm hoping for another fourth film because another fourth film. A fourth. Well, yeah, another fourth film.
That's right. Another fourth film, actually.
They're getting better. That's the point. Like, right. Keep going. Keep going. You're on a roll. You're on an upward trend.
I didn't dislike the second one, but I thought it was good. But
you mean the third one? Did you forget there was already a second one?
No,
the second one.
Yeah, Into Dark. Yeah, the second con. No, Into Darkness was all right. But no, Beyond was great, which leads him into the next point he made. That hey, if this was the last trick that they end on, he's happy with that film. He wasn't sure about coming back after Into Darkness, largely in part because I don't think they really developed him. They underutilized him. I was hoping that him and Scotty would get a little more screen time in Into Darkness, and McCoy was kind of left out in the cold.
Which just kind of hanging out with a Tribble, you know?
Yeah, which I think he did fine for the bits he did, but yes, it should have been more. And which leads into the third part they're talking about, he mentions, is Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. I say, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, it's Kirk and Spock, their relationship, because they're the biggest personalities on the ship, but no, I think it's these three, the way they play off each other.
Absolutely.
It has been. Yeah. So I was like, it's all three of them. So, Spock is more of the analytical kind of side. And then you got McCoy, who's more passionate. And then you got Kirk, who's the command guy, and he plays off them to come up with the solutions that he does, or, to make the decisions. So I think that they totally should work them together. Now he mentions that, and this makes sense too, that in the new versions of Star Trek, Spock is more contemporary because he's more in tune with his emotions than he was before in TOS. So that kind of leaves that triangle of those three personalities a little off because Spock's a little bit on the passionate side now. And then you got McCoy over here, but that's what he was happy with in Beyond. They got to play off that a little bit more with each other, which I think worked really well.
Right. It helped to have all those scenes where it was just the two of them together.
Yes. And then he goes on to talk, and I'll let you read the rest of the article for yourself, but he goes on to talk about making Leonard Nimoy cry. And I said, what? I looked at that. Apparently, Leonard Nimoy was moved by seeing Carl Urban as Dr. McCoy enough where it made him cry because he remembers DeForest Kelly fondly, or did remember him fondly when they were watching the movie. And then down at the bottom, he's promoting Beyond after Anton Yelchin's death was pretty tough. And I can imagine because they all look pretty tight friend-wise on the ship. I've seen them doing videos and stuff during the production off the side. And
oh, like the outtake reels?
They all look like they're enjoying each other's company. So I can only imagine if you lose somebody like this,
Well, I remember when they were doing the press tour and it was, they all knew the question was coming every single time they sat down to do an interview.
Yeah.
We just getting the question again and again and again about the questions about Anton. And it's just like, how many times do you want to, relive that. So I think that was a really, really hard press junket for them to be on.
Oh, yeah. Movie. Yeah, it happened, like a month before the movie came out?
Yeah.
Or it was pretty fresh. So, it was a tough thing. I hate part of me already missed him, and it's weird because I'm watching him in the movie, and he was still kind of fresh. But long live Anton. It's good.
Okay. All right, well, that's something a little bit more cheerful.
Phasers!
We'll move on. Yes. We're going to move on to Upstate New York Brewery boldly offers Star Trek-themed beers where no brew has gone before.
Not Romulan ale? Please, Dave. It's illegal.
And this comes out of
Rectigino.
Yeah, well, no, this is beer, not coffee.
Well, they're a Rectigino stout.
Oh, okay.
It just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it?
I'm going to just talk right over these guys.
I know, right?
Smalls Brewing Company is continuing a mission, now in its second year, to produce beers that tie into classic Star Trek series and TV.
Time?
Star Trek series, TV, and movies.
Time? Mm-hmm. Hold on. Wasn't Schmaltz the Laverne and Shirley Brewery?
Was it?
How did they get that name is what I'm wondering.
Planning.
Licensing.
Yes, merchandising.
Merchandising.
It started a few years ago with a very limited beer called Vulcan Ale, the Genesis Effect. Last year, the brewery marked the 40th anniversary of the debut of the original TV series. I think that would be 50th. Anniversary of the debut of the original TV series, with a golden ale named for one of the most beloved early episodes, The Trouble with Tribbles. The beer was made with the grain called triticale, since quadriticale doesn't exist.
We haven't even gotten to double quadriticale.
Then came brews named after Voyage to the Northeast Quadrant and earlier this year, Klingon Imperial Porter, which I actually have had. Several of which was a good beer. This summer, Smaltz is marketing the 30th anniversary of the follow-up series Star Trek: The Next Generation with a hoppy wheat beer called Symbiosis.
There's a free trill in the bottom of every bottle.
Yeah.
you don't want
I'm a host.
That one though. You just It's described as a smooth, easy drinking ale with prominent wheat maltiness and distinct flavors and aromas of Warrior Centennial and Amarillo hops. It's a 5.5% alcohol. I'm hoping that this makes it to the stores around here in the Northeast. I was surprised when I saw the Klingon Imperial Porter. Because I hadn't seen the other ones in store. So I don't know whether their distribution chain had expanded with the success of the other ones, but this was the first one. Have you, any of you gentlemen, had any of these?
I've had the Imperial Stout, yes.
I have not. I have to start looking for these at my favorite liquor store. If these people were really on top of their marketing, they would stock up like this stuff and sell them at cons.
Yes.
Get your truckload down to Atlanta for Dragon Con, you'll be sold out within a few hours. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Well, I remember just not too long ago, the little local store, it's like a beer store. They don't, and they have a variety. You just mix and match your own six packs. And they had the Klingon Imperial Stout, and I grabbed one. I thought it was pretty good.
All right.
Oh, so, by the way.
I'm sorry, I just can't stop thinking about that drunk trill in the bottom of every bottle. It's like the worm in the tequila.
You don't want that. It's because it just takes over and you don't want that.
You wake up in the morning, am I pregnant? No, you're just host. You're host now.
I'm Jadzia tanked.
Oh, by the way, that was Schatz Brewery.
Oh, there we go. Where did the Schmaltz thing before? Okay, anyway.
I don't know.
Thank you.
Let's move on to our next story.
We don't know much about Laverne and Shirley because around here, the topic is Trek.
Right.
This ain't no Laverne and Shirley show.
Yet.
Yet.
The topic is Laverne and Shirley.
Go start your own podcast. All right, at Star Trek Las Vegas 17, or is it STL 517? Star
Trek the 12.
Details announced for McFarlane's Star Trek Discovery figures, role play, toys, and more. On Saturday at Star Trek Las Vegas, comic book legend Todd McFarlane, not Seth MacFarlane, laid out some of his plans for McFarlane Toys' recently acquired license for Star Trek. He said they hope to provide figures and toys in a wide range of prices and scales across the Star Trek franchise. Both McFarlane and his brand manager, who joined him on the panel, made a point that both were hardcore Star Trek fans and both were very excited to have the license, with the brand manager noting, "We are not just making action figures, we are curating them as well. We are making them for you because it is very important to us." So well, they're
don't charge me.
Sell them to
they're,
you.
They're going yeah, to start don't. With a 7-inch figure of Picard and Kirk, and these are due out in the spring of 2018, and they are targeting a price of $19.99. They noted that they chose that price because, quote, we're trying to put these into your hands at prices that aren't intimidating.
$20 would be way too much.
For an action figure? No.
I was going to say, I think that...
As opposed to $19.99,
I said
$20. Yeah, $20. That's right out.
Psychologically, it's out of my price range. Right. So they're also coming up with some Discovery figures and role play as well. Looking at making those 7-inch figures the same price, $19.99. There is a Phaser and Deluxe figures. The Deluxe figures are actually going to be 10-inch figurines, weigh at $35. So again, not breaking the bank. You could collect a pretty decent collection.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was terrible, but yeah.
And they are also, what was the footnote down here? If it says, if things go well, there will be more. So they want to make a whole bunch of stuff.
Logical. If,
yes, you know, if your business...
If things sell?
Well, you could take the other approach. That didn't work. Let's try another one.
That's right.
Hey, that digital sculpture of Kirk looks spot on.
Well, I noticed the one about Kirk looked better in profile than front. And the one of Picard looks better as a front shot than in profile. It's kind of weird how they just have different perspectives. I know they both look just like they do.
And there's way too much hair on Picard.
That's what I was thinking, too. They're being very generous.
Well, it's a younger, more, I don't know.
Is I Claudius Kirk Picard?
he's got hair like when he was in
the flashbacks. The
flute episode. Oh. You know, when he had hair.
The inner light. Come on. We're getting to that later.
Yeah, he has hair like that. You know, he had hair on that planet, but.
All right, Greg, you got the next story as we cruise through this sector.
Yep.
Yes. So I did not know that they have plans for a comic book series, but apparently they do for Star Trek Discovery and a novel. So next month, Star Trek Discovery will be the first series in the franchise since Star Trek Enterprise came to an end in 2005. Enterprise broke with Star Trek tradition by becoming the first television show in the franchise without a comic book tie-in series. I did not know that either.
For shame.
However, Star Trek Discovery viewers will only have to wait a few weeks before the new series gets a comic of its own. So, via The Hollywood Reporter, IDW announced the new details about the Star Trek Discovery comic at the 16th annual Star Trek convention, which was just last week, as we mentioned. The Discovery comic is being co-written by Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson, with art by Tony Chastain. Bayer is also the writer for the live-action Star Trek Discovery series, while Johnson has experience in writing comic book adventures of the original crew in the Kelvin timeline. Chastain previously collaborated with Johnson on Star Trek Boldly Go comic book series. Cool. So I'm looking forward to that. And apparently there's a book coming out. It also ties into the show. Let's see. At the convention, Simon & Schuster released the cover for the Star Trek Discovery Desperate Hours, the first novel based upon the series. Unlike the comic, the focus will squarely fall upon Sequoia Martin Green's Michael Burnham character shortly after she is named first officer of the starship, the Shenzhou. David Mack is the writer of this story. And let's see, when did it say it was coming out? I want to say that it was coming out before the show comes on.
That is a hot cover.
Well,
blue is the new hot. Let's see. I was looking to see when they said it's coming out. I thought.
It says Desperate Hours following on September 26th. So two days after the show starts.
Okay.
Which makes sense because I think usually books come out on Tuesdays. I remember records used to come out on.
Yeah.
Weeks. Wow. I forgot all about that. Oh, man. When records were released. Yep. And I used to have to wait at the record store to buy them, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, thanks.
I thought the book was coming out first. And I was like, that's kind of weird. I wonder how they're going to, introduce the characters in the book without spoiling the show.
But and they're not.
I guess not. So it's not a problem.
The sequel to Desperate Hours is going to be Desperate Housewives.
No.
Desperate Starship Housewives.
Let's move on to Lights, Camera, Trekkies Film Academy to open for Star Trek fans. A CBS-backed Star Trek Film Academy will allow fans to explore the final frontier by helping them make their own films, according to an announcement at the Star Trek Las Vegas convention last weekend. Get a feeling a lot happened at Star Trek Las Vegas?
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it. Darn it. And it's only a few hours drive from here.
Nathan Matisse reported at Ars Technica that the program will be in collaboration with Star Trek New Voyages, a fan series that ran from 2004 to 2015. Productions will use the New Voyages sets in Ticonderoga, New York, which we've talked about before. I visited that set, and employ professionals who worked on other Star Trek shows. Quote, fans will work side by side with talented Star Trek artists to create short vignettes from beginning to end, close quote, Star Trek Film Academy representatives said in a statement. The adventure for attendees will start with pre-production meetings, go through rehearsal, lighting, costuming, and makeup, all the way through to filming. Fans can participate in front of or behind the camera. The initiative marks the first time CBS has officially backed fan films since the series debuted on the network in 1967. Well, it didn't debut on CBS. It appeared on premiered on NBC in 1966.
That's true. Details.
Remember, the topic is Trek.
Yeah.
It also comes a few months after copyright holders CBS and Paramount reached a settlement with the group producing Axanar, a film production that was intended to be a feature-length film until the copyright holders alleged infringement. So I think this is a great use of that set. I think it's a great use of the material. I think it's a smart move, because I'm assuming that you're working on a production and the production will be no longer than 15 minutes, which keeps it inside the guideline.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So your new content coming out of those sets, and I think that's absolutely great.
Can we write our own and bring it and have them build it?
You probably can. I bet you can have your own script when you walk in and you have a production meeting and do all the.
So yeah, why not? I haven't seen pricing yet, and when we get more details again on this, we can get back to you, do a follow up on that.
See, I thought that they had a partnership with CBS and Paramount temporarily to do tours. And then when I saw this, I went, oh, good. Because I was just wondering, I wonder how long they're going to be able to continue those tours. Well, apparently they can do a little further because they're making it more of a experience than actual, just a tour.
Right.
So now you got to go back, Clinton.
Absolutely. Well, we should all go. Next time we all go.
Yep. I think we're going to take some of our old Technorama skits and make them into real life. Hello,
did you wet your pants?
There you go. Good news, everybody.
It's good news, everyone. Wow. Whatever. One line, and he can't get it right.
Well, it's a different series, so it's a different line.
He's going to have to work with.
He didn't want license infringement.
That's right.
Good news, people.
Totally different. Speaking of totally different, why don't we move on to your story, Chuck?
This is totally different. This is Flatpak Star Trek Ship Kit lets you DIY Starfleet. If you're a Star Trek fan, here's something a little different for you. And now for something completely different. These kits from Ozpin's Factory let you assemble your own starships from sheets of laser-cut birch plywood. These models are really nifty and come in a variety of designs based on ships from the Trek universe. They've got all models, all various classes of Federation starships, including NX, Constitution, Sovereign, Miranda, Ambassador, Intrepid, Excelsior, and Galaxy class. So come on down, you starships.
Come on down today.
Do they have any Deep Space Nines?
Yes, we've got Deep Space Nines.
Deep Space Nines?
Free balloons for the first kids that come.
Yeah.
and those wavy giant things that just flop around all over the place. We got those too.
They're scary. You can't miss them. Come on down to Crazy Eddie's used starships.
We're dealing.
No, these are really beautiful pieces of art. And you can put them together and you get like a little you know, Enterprise D, and it's pretty slick. It says kits vary in size, but generally measure about 16 to 20 inches long. DS9 is just 11 and a half inches across, though, and require assembly of 100 to 200 pieces. You'll need emery board, sandpaper, an X-Acto knife, and wood glue to put them together. Prices range, here's the scary part, $60 to $80 each. Grab one Starship or build your own complete Starfleet over on Etsy now. But they are beautiful.
Start with one. Yeah, they are. They're really nice. A lot nicer than I thought they were going to be just based on the fact that it was these cutouts, but they are really, really nice.
Right. You get some curvature in some of the pieces, and it's they've got an artistic value all their own. The Enterprise D and what's the one next to it? Is that an A? Not the D. The original with the rounded nacelles
and the movie.
And the movie.
Yeah.
The wooden slats run lengthwise on the nacelles and on the lower section by the deflector dish, and it kind of gives it that look like it just came out of a pub.
What? I wasn't expecting you to say that.
It's got some aesthetic to it that I'm trying to place, and I can't quite place it. I'm looking to you guys for help. It looks like barrel staves in a way.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. All right. I see what you're
saying. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Hey, it looks like they're going to jump into it and go into down a river.
No.
Come out of the ocean. Well, that would be crazy if it starts to come out of the ocean.
Yeah, this kind of looks like, you know, if Game of Thrones crossed with Star Trek, you'd have a ship that looked like this.
Yeah, it's got like a steampunk aesthetic to it.
Yeah, a bit so.
But
bit
then
so.
Daenerys Targaryen's dragons would burn them all up.
Yeah, but $60 to $80. I wish Todd McFarlane was in charge of pricing these too.
That's right. $20, $19.99.
It's a piece of wood.
What are you gonna do? All right. Last story is yours, Craig.
Yes, and this is something I happened across. I was watching a video on YouTube, and when it ends, you know, sometimes it gives you the collage of the different other videos you might be interested in. And one of them caught my eye. I don't know why it did, but I clicked on it. Started watching this. This guy going through a 3D model of the Star Trek, the Enterprise D, excuse me, from Next Gen. And I was like, "Well, this is cool." And then I just kind of watched it for a few minutes. And he was going to different decks and all this other stuff. And I'm like, the detail looked fantastic. I wanted to see it myself. Well, he had a link to it in description. And over at stage-9.co.uk. You can download this 3D model. It's more of a, it's actually a 3D rendering built on the Unreal 3D engine, you know, for gaming.
Yep.
And the people have been working on this for quite some time. And they had some comparison pictures in here. You can see how long they've been working on it. But when you go through, when I finally got it running on my machine, seriously, it's fantastic. I was on the bridge. You can walk around and just see different aspects of the bridge. And it reminds me of when we were in Star Trek, the Enterprise's
Star Trek Experience.
And Star Trek Experience. And I was like, okay, this is pretty accurate. And then you can pull up the menu and select the bridge from TNG season 1. They have a TNG 2 through 7. I imagine it was the same most of the time. And a Next Generation. And there was another version of it. I can't remember which one they had. So you can switch between them. And it changed the bridge went from the captain's chair was on the platform risers like it is in the movie Generations.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I was like, this is really cool. And you can turn on Red Alert, walk through the entire ship. And the guy was talking about how they added a flag in the program. So if you turn on Red Alert, it's ship-wide. You know, and they have lights that are affected with Red Alert. So only like the strips in down the hallways would have the red, or different lights in the bridge would be red. It's really cool. You can go through the ready room. You can go through the conference room, 10 forward. You go in the shuttle bay. Now get this, guys, you can go in the shuttle bay, open the door You go, you know, the big door.
Yeah.
And get in the shuttle. Get the shuttle. Yeah. and get in the shuttle and fly the shuttle out of the Enterprise.
Cool.
I hijacked the shuttle. Galileo is mine.
I'm watching the demonstration video, and the guy starts going out the door. He's like, oh yeah, this is fantastic. And he starts to turn. He goes, whoa, it's in a cell.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, it was kind of weird watching him almost go right under the nacelle, but he went around the front and it came back in. It was great. Like I said, there's not much to it. There's people walking around, like some crew members, which is eerie, like the Walking Dead kind of eerie, where you're walking by them and they're just kind of, you're waiting for one of them to go, ugh, you know, but he's just kind of staring at you.
Zombie Trek.
Yeah, they're just kind of staring at you as you walk by, like, what the hell are you doing here? Yeah. You lost?
The theme of the latest episode.
Yeah. And it says here on the website that they talk about virtual reality and that it apparently does offer some support for a headset as well, which would really make it an immersive experience.
Yeah, so if you have an Oculus Rift, you can use it, and it uses Steam VR, I think. I'm not familiar with all the VR stuff. I just did it on my PC, and unfortunately, I'm not very good with the. I start getting a little motion sickness after messing with that for a while.
Ah.
And I was like, I got to go to the shuttle bay, but I'm not feeling too good. I got to get up.
Can I just beep there, please? I don't want
to. I need a site to site transport quickly. But no, it was fantastic. If anything,
there's a Jeffrey's tube when you need it.
Where's the trash can? No. So if you go to the website, they have some demonstration videos. If you don't want to download it and install it, don't even really install it. You just run it. If you want to go see it, there's some videos. I highly recommend at least watching a few of them because it's pretty good. And these people have done some amazing work.
All right. Very cool. All right. We're running long. We had a lot of news to get through this week. I just want to quickly touch on our main topic, our main mission, which was that we're coming right up on the 30th anniversary of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I know that the actual anniversary is not until September, but it's September 28th. And, well, we might be talking about Discovery and Huff a lot in September. Yeah, so I wanted to just spend a few minutes and acknowledge the 30th anniversary and get people's impressions about Star Trek, the Next Generation, what they felt about it. You know, what do you remember most about Star Trek, the Next Generation? I'll start with you, Chuck.
What do I remember most? Great. I liked pretty much everything. The sets, the character development, well, you know, once you get past season one, I think I like the two-parters, like Reunification. Time Zero was another one of my favorites. Relics, was that a two-parter or was that a one? I can't remember.
It was just a one-parter.
Okay. Yeah. There was another two-parter that I'm trying to think of.
Best of Both Worlds.
Oh, yes. Oh, that was probably the first one that a lot of people sat up and took notice and went,
oh, yeah.
You know, when they finally stopped talking about the Borg and you got to see some Borg. Yes. So, I mean, they weren't afraid to explore those areas and you know, kick butt and take numbers. I mean, when it went a little darker, I mean, it didn't stay dark and gloomy, but I enjoyed it. I really did. This was a staple. Well, as those of you who are listening to the Dog Days of Podcasting know that I'm going through the history of Donna's and my early relationship in 1987 as I read old bulletin board postings that I have on hard copy. And I distinctly remember a number of nights when we would just sit back and watch Star Trek The Next Generation fresh on TV, you know, when it came out, and recorded on VHS years later when we were married and had a TV and a VCR. It was a lot of fun. It really became a big part of you know, our early relationship.
Yeah, when it first came out, I was still a member of the Star Trek Club that Bonnie and I, my wife, met through, and we had a a big get together and we watched the 2-hour premiere, and we were recording it at that time. So as soon as it was over, we rewound the tape
and with we watched pencil?
The entire thing. Yes, with a pencil. And we watched the entire thing over again. We could fast forward through the commercials the second time.
Yes.
And had lots of discussion about it. And it's odd to think now, but what a thing that was to have new Star Trek on television. I mean, it was familiar, yet it was completely unfamiliar. It was a very disjointing experience to have this thing. And they were taking their first stumbles through getting everything right with the series. And we're all trying to get used to this new thing. You know, you're comparing it to original Trek.
Lots of comparisons early on.
And, you know, because we still to this day have the argument, who's the better captain, Picard or Kirk? Of course, it's Kirk, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
So that's you can go to the website or Facebook page and make your comments about that one. But I just remember things happening during the time of those early days of Trek. One of the things was the Berlin Wall was coming down during those early days of Trek. And so you're having this dynamics change in the real world, and you have your old foe of the Klingons. Well, you know, they're now being
a crew member
worked around. Yep. And yeah, it's just
got ridges on their head.
No, that was explained in Star Trek III. Come on, Craig. I mean, there was introduced, not explained, but it was introduced in Star Trek III.
It's going to be explained finally now that we're, like, you know, 30 years after that.
We already took care of that.
Years after, you know, what was going on. So how about you, Craig? Your impressions?
I remember watching the first season or the first episode.
Oh, the disappointment.
And I just couldn't stand it. No.
More galactic cheerleader.
It was one of those things where I locked myself in a room so I could watch it without anybody talking to me, and you know, I could pay attention to it. But I think that, again, you were right, Clinton, when you said it was familiar yet unfamiliar. They take it and they pushed it a little bit forward. You got like holodecks, you know, and some new technologies that ended up being some good plot devices in a lot of the episodes. Data, I think I was more enamored by as a character than anybody for a long time, because I wanted to see how he fit into this world and how he was trying to evolve himself, which, you know, over time he did, of course. But I thought the season really started, or the series started really getting good when they got the collars on their uniforms. So maybe they should have, maybe should have put that on there a long time
ago. That was the key thing. It was the uniforms that made the difference.
That's right. So, but I loved watching some of the alternate universe, like, when you see the different Enterprises, like the Enterprise C came in and stuff like that, you know, how those kind of stories that they take it and kind of shift things. And actually that story ended up having a longer lasting effect than anybody knew. But a lot of those things, the relationships between everybody, I think seeing Picard as somebody that wasn't necessarily fist blazing all the time, although there were some times that he went in and kicked some butt, but not necessarily with fists, but, you know, making a bold decision. But, you know, being a different kind of captain, and Riker, while he would never take a command.
I never understood that one. Really.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is in TNG is how they started using that. The transporters were more dynamic because they had a transporter room, but there was times when they just went from the bridge to the planet, you know, or, you know, site to site rather than having to go to the transporter room and then beam down.
They had a few years to evolve the technology.
Right. And I think that the other thing is that one of the things that wasn't quite as shocking as people looking back on it now might think is the look of the ship and how everything was not as, let's say, cheesy as the original series bridge and the buttons and so forth. But you have to remember, we'd already seen iterations of the Enterprise in the movies where they had already moved away from those type of things. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't as much of a shock as I think you might first believe. Oh, well, you went from this to that. Yeah, but we already had like, you know, three or four movies by that point that showed us higher tech Enterprise.
Yeah, and they had whole families on this ship.
That's true.
We didn't really have that before.
You even saw them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, whenever they're evacuating one part of the ship to the other.
When they had to leave, you saw them.
Yeah, actually seeing, you know, for years, I've heard some of my friends when I was younger, they always said, the Enterprise, the saucer section can come off. And, you know, you never saw that, or I don't think they even alluded to it. I'm not sure in the TOS or the other movies until TNG, where you actually did it.
Yeah, in the very first episode.
Yeah, the very first episode.
Never again until the movies.
No. Yeah, I think you're right. They did it again, but it was the same footage. Exact same footage. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, they reused it, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But TNG...
So, but it's fine.
And they didn't have the 5-minute music going with it.
Yeah.
And the jellyfish weren't there going, what are you doing?
Well, TNG, to me, is probably just as important as TOS, because I enjoy them both so much.
Yeah, and I think that... people can have, certainly, and do tend to have their own feelings about which series best represents Star Trek or which is their Star Trek. It seems, at least on conversations that I hear, that the majority of people fall in either the original series or Next Generation camp. Now, I say that as an overarching thing. I know there are people out there where Enterprise is their Star Trek, or Deep Space Nine is their Star Trek, or Voyager, just as Discovery will be some people's Star Trek.
Wow, you didn't even give the animated series an honorable mention.
Oh,
that's my Star Trek.
All right. Yeah.
Was there a saucer separation in the animated series?
Right into the topic is Trek. Put on our Facebook page if you think the animated series is your Star Trek.
There you go.
But I think that that's one of its... is that it had the responsibility of being the thing that followed up after the original series. It had to live on its own. It had, you know, tentative connections to what had come before, but it had to go off in its own direction.
Hey, and for all the turmoil and stuff that was happening behind the scenes that we never really saw, of course. You know, there's a lot of stuff with Gene Roddenberry, yep. and I'm surprised that it worked out as well as it did.
right. Yeah, I mean, if it had crashed and burned.
Oh, the franchise would have crashed and burned a lot sooner.
Yeah, that would have been about it. They would have, you know, gone through a couple more movies with the original cast, and then... you know, I don't know if they would have given it another shot. You can make the argument that, well, maybe 20 years later they might try again or something. But I mean, it was Star Trek: The Next Generation was the beginning of a long, long period of Star Trek on television again.
Yep.
And also remember that it was first run syndication, which was something completely different. That it wasn't on a network.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So it had a lot of things to overcome, and it overcame them and became something that people still love today. So I think that it has a proud legacy to it, and that I think that other iterations of Star Trek that have come along owe as much to it as they do to the original series. So, as I said, we're running long. We were going to do a warp speed roundtable, but we're so far behind schedule, we're going to even skip our warp speed roundtable.
It's too slow for us tonight.
Next time.
next time. So we will put that in the queue for next episode. So I think it's time to boldly go that away until next episode.
That's your cue, Chuck.
If you like this, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out our other mostly non-Trek related podcasts, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as always, as we say here on The Topic Is, don't put on the red shirt.